Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. We got another on-location edition. We at The Athletic all got together. It was a little bit of a party, but not for this animal. Mitch Sherman, our Nebraska beat writer, just been working out. I just watched you do a million burpees, heavy dumbbell thrusters. Like, you do not play in the gym.
Yeah, I mean, I had to, after Cinco de Mayo last night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we let loose a little bit, more with the food than
the
drink. I heard
there was the ancient art of karaoke.
There was. I didn't participate in that, but I observed, saw some of it. That is a Cinco de Mayo tradition, right?
Karaoke?
I think it's a...
What do you have to... Is there a song that you would have to sing? Like, could you do...
Like Margaritaville?
I would do like Low... Could I do Lowrider by War? Because then you don't actually have to sing. You just have to...
There was some songs.
Dance along.
Yeah, there were some songs.
Oye Como Va? You don't have to do much there.
Right. There were some songs where there was not a lot of singing going on. And not because that was the nature of the song, because that was the person who chose to sing it.
So my go-to karaoke song, I Found Someone by Cher.
Okay.
Classic 90s Cher.
Yeah.
You know, this is, or maybe it's the late 80s. After If I Could Turn Back Time. Before the Renaissance with Believe, you could just really go. You can get it. But I had multiple podcasts. I think I had a radio today. So, you know, they got to protect the instrument.
So. Yeah. So my go-to karaoke, and it's I say go-to, and I think it's been performed maybe twice in my life. Not sure if it's ever happened in this country, but once is Love Shack by the B-52s.
Oh, that's an excellent one.
And it's got to be a duet. So, you know, you're up on stage and you know,
we got to get Seth Emerson, our Georgia beat writer, because, you know, Athens band, the B-52s.
Yes.
So,
yes.
We got to get him on.
Spinoff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we got to do that. But right now, we need to talk Nebraska.
Yes.
Because there is a lot going on in that program. The NCAA. Which still exists, by the way, for breaking news, just announced that the penalties for the investigation into the extra coaching, which it's funny because I just had Doug Howler on to talk Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff that they're accused of is some of the dumbest cheating you've ever heard of.
Yep.
Like when Tennessee, I've heard when the notice of allegations finally comes out, it will be some of the dumbest stuff you've ever heard of. But Nebraska using extra impermissible coaches to coach special teams.
That is, I don't even know what the right word is to describe it. I think I wrote embarrassing in my write-up on Monday.
But this is their biggest problem.
Right.
Of their many problems. And if you're going to cheat to do it, at least cheat with somebody who knows what they're doing.
Well, in some way it makes sense because they tried to cut corners on special teams. And that has been an Achilles heel for Scott Frost since day one at Nebraska. In all four seasons, they've not wanted to truly invest in special teams in the way that you need to do it to compete in the Big Ten West, and it's cost them over and over and over. And this instance is, okay, well, we don't really need a coach to do it.
Yeah.
We'll just bring an analyst in. Oh, well, but he's gonna coach a little bit because everybody does that.
Yeah.
And then, fittingly for Nebraska, and as it works in the past 20 years, they get caught.
Hidden yards, field position. Come on, guys. Yeah. You do have to invest. It's a third of the game. Have you not heard every cliche in the history of football? Come on. No, I do think it's very interesting. This whole situation, because when that happened, when the investigation was announced, my first thought, because I'm super cynical, is, oh, they're trying to fire Scott Frost for free.
Yeah.
And maybe they got into this thing, because it's a level two violation. This isn't something a coach normally would get fired over. So you kind of look into that and you go, if they had fired him, he probably had a lawsuit if they didn't want to pay his buyout.
Okay, well, we talked about this last August when the initial reports came out that there was an investigation.
Right.
And that's when Trev Alberts, the athletic director who'd been on the job for less than 1 month at that time, you know, pulled Scott Frost off the practice field. Mm-hmm. I mean, Scott was unhappy to say the least,
yeah.
to be there in front of the media that day to have to address these allegations 10 days before the opener at right. Illinois. And Trev was his normal, cool, collected self and was very fatherly in that moment. Like, and I don't mean fatherly in a good way.
He's like 3 years older than Scott.
I mean fatherly in the sense that, like, the kid just got caught sneaking out the car at night, you know, when he's 16 years old and was supposed to be in bed.
Say you're sorry to Mr. Sherman and Mr. Chatelain and yeah.
Yes, it was that kind of a moment. And I think we may have talked about it then that it did kind of seem like, well, you know, who ratted them out? You know, was it Bill Moos who had been
right.
fired? He hadn't been fired.
Right.
He had been shown the door
and
given a fat paycheck a couple of months earlier. Well, in the infractions report, the details come out that the investigation actually began in January of 2021. So right around the time that Jonathan Rutledge, the special teams analyst mm-hmm. in question here, was let go by Scott Frost. Moos still had
You can't fire the guy you were cheating with.
Right. Moos still had 5-6 months left to go. So I don't think he was going scorched earth at that time.
Yeah.
It didn't come from him. It said media reports is what tipped off the NCAA.
Well, and it's interesting because I remember reading a column in one of the Nebraska, either I can't remember if it was World Herald or the Journal Star, when one of their former assistants, longtime assistants, came back from LSU as an analyst.
Bill Bush.
Yeah, Bill Bush. Yeah. And the column basically made it sound like Bill Bush was an assistant coach, which, listen, that's what everybody does. We all know that. But you're not supposed to admit it.
So Bill Bush was a defensive analyst, and he was working with the secondary. And at least there was a secondary coach.
Right.
At least, you know, he was an understudy or assisting
right.
somebody who could go out there and direct the players and tell them, hey, this is what you need to do in coverage.
Right.
With special teams, there was no special teams coach. And
just says the head coach is not doing what he's supposed to do, because all successful college football head coaches have someone who cares deeply about special teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Shane Beamer, who's now the head coach at South Carolina, was kind of the special teams coordinator. He had tight ends, I think, as his position group. But like at Georgia and Oklahoma, he was the special teams coordinator. That was his job.
Think about Scott Frost and getting his taste of success or tastes
at
of success
UCF,
in Oregon and UCF, where you overwhelm opponents with your talent and your offensive scheme. And it minimizes, certainly in the AAC, that year in 17 when UCF beat teams 62-43 minimizes special teams.
They had a return guy who could just
and you put talent
torch.
Out there and they're going to get it done whether you're paying attention to it or not. So Nebraska went from that analyst situation in 2020 to having a special teams coordinator on the field in 2021 who was also coaching the outside linebackers, which they tried before and that didn't work again last year. You know, directly losing two games, Michigan State and then Iowa, because of a huge special teams mistake, in addition to other errors on special teams that contributed to losses, to now finally Bill Bush, the coach that you mentioned, who came back as a defensive analyst from LSU in his third stint at Nebraska on the staff. He has finally been elevated to special teams coordinator this year.
All right.
And, you know, he's a legal one of the 10 assistant coaches.
There you go.
And the guy is detail obsessed. So here we are, year five. Got a special teams coordinator. I was writing about it after year one.
Wow.
Hire one of these guys.
Well, here's the thing. You look at the math, and we've covered this pretty thoroughly. I wrote about it in The Athletic a few months ago. The circumstances of last season, they could play it again 1,000 times, and they might go 3-9, like 3 of the 1,000. It was highly unlikely the result that happened. Their aggregate score in the Big Ten was even, right? And they were 1-8.
Because of the plus 49 against Northwestern.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were in those
games.
Every game. So that's the part. I understand why they kept Frost. Mm-hmm. It makes sense because if you play that season, you know, because eventually the math either evens out or works out in your favor. So you play a similar season, you're probably looking at 7-5.
If you play those 9 games that Nebraska lost by single digits, if you play each one of those seasons 9 times, you're not going 0-81. But I don't think they're going 40-41, just because of some of the problems that exist within the program. We talk about special teams, you know, other attention to detail areas that didn't work out. If Nebraska had been 2-7 or 3-6 in those 9 single digit losses, I would tend to say more like it will even out over time.
Right.
But if you do go 0-9 and you lose all of them,
it's kind of the same stuff.
stuff over right. and over.
Then I think it's yeah. systemic.
The Michigan State game.
Yeah.
Just, I just remember watching that punt go up and thinking, this will be bad.
Bad.
I mean, the Nebraska defense didn't allow a first down in the second half of that game.
Yeah.
And then it went overtime and it fell apart after the punt return.
So let's talk about that defense, because that was clearly the strength of the yeah. team. They were outstanding, but they lost some talent. Now, what's interesting to me about this new world, Nebraska strikes me as the kind of place that can attract a really good transfer. And they just got Sean Mathis from yeah. TCU. It is a place where you can be a rock star if you're good and help the team be good. So NIL would be... Mm-hmm. You could make it bank with the NIL that, you know, that NIL is actually intended to be. Or if somebody really wanted to do a deal, I'm sure there's some passionate Nebraska fans who want to do that too. So it strikes me as a time where they could reload a little bit. Whereas before, if they lost a bunch of talent, now you gotta dig it back up.
Yeah, they're in double digits with the Division I transfers. They've remade the special teams, at least the return game with Trey Palmer,
right.
Wide receiver, you know, fastest guy on the team now from LSU, came with Mickey Joseph, mm-hmm. Receiver. He's going to return kicks, and then you know you got a punter who's the FCS punter of the year. You have a kicker coming in after the spring semester, which is ending next week, from Furman, a solid FCS kicker. So they've addressed these issues. Of course, the quarterback situation we know about with Casey Thompson. He's yep. the likely starter from Texas. You know, you have Chuba Purdy from Florida State. There's a little bit of help on the offensive line, and now you start talking about O'Shawn Mathis as an edge rusher mm-hmm. coming from TCU, picks Nebraska over Texas, and then on the heels of that, Devin Drew from Texas Tech. Who's a big space eater as an interior lineman, which is the biggest area of need. They got help in the secondary with Tommy Hill, the Arizona State transfer who was a Nebraska target a year ago out of high school. Running back, there's a JUCO running back. There's help all over the field with the transfers. Nebraska's bidding to be the 2022 Michigan State.
Right.
I don't know if there's a Kenneth Walker who came walking through that door. Maybe. That's O'Shawn
Mathis.
Michigan
State didn't know that when Kenneth Walker came walking through that door.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You know, I'm hesitant to pump sunshine when it comes to Nebraska, because
right.
I feel like their fan base, it's not the team, it's not the coaching staff, but the fan base, I feel like, gets victimized by that because, and you and I have talked about this a bunch of times, the coverage of Nebraska is so intense. It is the thing everybody's the most interested in. It is all you hear about on the radio when you're there. It is all that's written about in the newspapers there. And you got to write about something in the off season. So you naturally tend toward optimism.
Yeah, it's the offseason. You're not losing games.
Yeah. But in this particular case, the circumstances have changed in a way that I do think it favors Nebraska.
Well, the thing that I continue to come back to as I, you know, shape my offseason coverage are a couple of things. Right, you're right. There is always that tendency to kind of look at the glass half full from January through July. But a couple things. One, you can't help but ignore the situation that occurred in November after the Ohio State game when Scott Frost did get that reprieve, mm-hmm. the terms that were attached to it.
Yes.
The buyout gets cut in half, 50%. It goes from 15 to $7.5 million on October 1st.
That's six games in, right?
Five games. It was six. Okay. They added a bye week with the reshuffled Big Ten schedule. So it's Indiana. It's the fifth game of the year that day. If Nebraska's in a bad place on October 1st, I'm not saying Scott Frost gets fired that day after the game, but the writing will be very, very clear on the wall. I mean, if you're 2-3, you know, that's going to be an ugly next 6 weeks to Black Friday.
Yeah.
That is one thing that kind of keeps me grounded and straying, you know, not leaning toward that normal optimistic offseason state.
Right.
And the other thing is we talked a little bit about the defensive line, and up until a week ago, there was no good news for the defensive line. And it's kind of the same thing for the offensive line. Nebraska is – its biggest questions are – at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, Cam Jurgens off to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Right, second-round pick. Big questions. The top two returning offensive linemen, Turner Corcoran and Teddy Prochaska, missed the spring coming off of surgeries. Mm-hmm. Those guys have got to get back. They've got to be the anchors for this line. Are they going to be ready by August? Even if they are they going to mesh into this new system with Donovan Areola, the offensive line coach who comes from the Chicago Bears? He's in his first college
familiar name
full-time
in
assistant. Absolutely. Brother of Dominic Raiola.
Right.
Uncle of Dylan Raiola, yes. the top quarterback in the 2024 class, who I don't think is going to fulfill the dreams
the
of
family?
Of all.
How's your family? Come
we'll
on.
See. We'll see. I'd say look to Columbus, Ohio as a possibility.
Well, but what have they done with Quo? Wait. they pump out first-rounders.
So if you don't play what if your weakness as a program in the Big Ten West against Minnesota and Wisconsin and Iowa is the offensive and defensive lines, it doesn't really matter this talent that you've brought in from the transfer portal at the skill positions.
Yeah.
You've got to be solid at those in the trenches.
It's interesting because I've been talking to a lot of people about this over the past few weeks. The D-line, there's been a little bit. You've seen some edge rushers move around.
Mm-hmm.
Offensive line, you have not seen much at all. Interior defensive line. You haven't seen much.
That's
at
why
all.
Those guys are at such a premium in the NIL.
They're at a premium. There aren't many of them. They tend to already be at your Alabamas, your Georgias, your Ohio States. But I also was thinking, I was talking to an offensive line coach about this. Is it possibly because they're just more loyal? Like that their personality type does not lend itself to.
It's a good question.
Wanting to leave in the transfer
portal? Offensive linemen. Aren't they always like the pragmatic types?
Yes.
They're the smart guys.
Your job is to protect anonymously.
Right. Those are the guys who become accountants. You know, like when they don't
medical
make it to
device
the NFL.
Salesman, Mitch. Medical. Right. So many medical device salesmen.
I know. I mean, in many years of covering Nebraska football, and then living in Omaha, where so many of the Nebraska football alums end up settling and raising families, like the offensive linemen who were from like my generation who played. I mean, they're all like regular guys, like good guys. And I don't know that I can say the same thing necessarily about like many other positions on the field. So yeah, I think their offensive linemen are just kind of they're built a certain way.
Yeah.
Not just physically.
Which makes it harder if that's where you've got deficiencies. Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about that, but I do think they're just like personality wise, it's less of a tendency for those guys to be in the portal.
And they're like, I'm comfortable. All my clothes are here.
Yeah.
I know where I like to move.
Eat. My favorite restaurants are.
Yeah. Gotta find a new taco place. Who's got the time?
Right. So. And it wasn't, Nebraska needed more help from the portal on the D-line than it did on the offensive line. It did get two offensive line transfers. Kevin Williams from Northern Colorado. He's an Omaha North graduate, and he's come in and been serviceable. And then Hunter Anthony, a veteran lineman from Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
But neither one of those guys is going to go out there and be, you know, an All-Big Ten.
Star, yeah.
Yeah. So they and Jurgens. You mentioned Jurgens. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he was back as the anchor of that thing, it'd be a different conversation.
And that's why I explain to people that NIL is not the dollar figures that you hear getting thrown around, because nobody was going to match what Cam Jurgens was going to make his first year as a second-round draft pick for the Eagles. Like, that's not going to happen. So.
Of course not. Yeah, and I mean, it benefits Cam Jurgens and his future, not just in 2022,
but clock faster on your next contract.
I mean, look at him getting to learn from Jason Kelsey, and it's I'm happy for Cam Jurgens because he's been through so much.
Yeah.
You know, going back to his high school time and decide. I mean, he almost went to LSU before Frost, you know, reeled him in.
The LSU Nebraska connection with Mickey Joseph now and Bill Bush, who was there before.
Right. It goes both ways, and that's why a guy like Cam Jurgens out of Beatrice, Nebraska, when things were falling apart under Mike Riley in 2017, that's why LSU was the school that was able to get in with he's a top 100 player nationally.
Oh, yeah.
He was a tight end.
Yeah.
And LSU was able to come in and because it had those Nebraska connections on its staff. And you know, Frost, to his credit, after getting hired, immediately targeted Cam Jurgens and then made the right decision. Scott Frost gets a ton of credit, should get a ton of credit for seeing that Cam Jurgens as a high school tight end could be a great center.
Yeah.
And from the beginning, he said, this guy can play in the NFL. Yeah. And 4 years later, he's the number 51 pick in the draft.
And now Cam Jurgens learning from a future Hall of Fame center whose brother's kind of a good tight end.
Right, yeah. right. And maybe he can go to Thanksgiving with the Kelseys or something like that. Yeah,
he can trade tight end stories with Travis. So, but yeah, it's such a strange dynamic with Nebraska because obviously there is so much frustration. But you look at how close everything was last season, and they did address the issues. It does seem like they have really addressed them this time.
Yeah, attempted to.
So what does it take? So not even after game five, but assuming Frost gets through this season, that it's not a complete disaster and they don't do something, what does it take for him to be back and for them to be looking at him as the actual long-term solution?
Well, continue to deal with special teams in the way that they have. That's until it's fixed, it's not.
That's one of the, if it's bad, and even if they're okay, you just do it anyway. You get rid of them anyway because it's like the same problem over and over again, feels like.
Well, I think there's a win number.
Right.
And if you look bad at special teams, but you win 7 or 8 games, which isn't likely to happen.
Right, because you probably can't do one without doing the other. Yeah.
Then maybe there's a way around what you just suggested. But yeah, if it does look the same, like you continue to be tripping over your own feet and having these self-inflicted losses, and not to say that those the teams that beat Nebraska. I don't want to be saying that Nebraska gave those games away a couple of times.
I'm kind of happy to say it for the Michigan State game. Iowa, they didn't – like Iowa did beat them.
Yes.
They had the block punt, but they also dominated the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not just that play.
It was Nebraska opening the door to allow all of Michigan – fumble by Adrian Martinez when Nebraska is driving for a score that beats Michigan, a college football playoff team.
Illinois, the scoop and score fumble.
Right. These are things where Nebraska put it on the carpet, literally. And these Big Ten teams took it. Even Oklahoma, there were opportunities for Nebraska.
Yeah, they could have beaten Oklahoma. Yeah. So
to answer your question about what needs to happen for it to work long-term for Scott Frost, they just need to be a functional, like there can't be this constant.
Is competent the right word?
Yeah, I mean, I've used functional a lot, but I think competence is a good synonym there.
Yeah,
the teams that succeed in Nebraska's division follow a formula of strong physical offensive line play, solid special teams. They're not overly flashy.
Yeah,
and I don't necessarily believe that Nebraska has to be that exact. They don't need to be a Wisconsin replica.
Right,
Wisconsin's probably going to do it. You're going to do their thing better than Nebraska for the near future.
Right.
This is not going to turn by 2025 where all of a sudden Nebraska's mastered Wisconsin's. So you can be different. That's fine. I mean, there's examples of this. Purdue is different.
Exactly.
It has stepped up and had success. So Nebraska can do its thing and can attract enough talent and has the NIL structure and different things in place. I mean, they're building this massive new complex that's going to be the biggest in college football when it opens.
They feel very similar to Texas A&M in that aspect, where people are still giving, they're still building. They can do a bunch of NIL stuff if they want to because of the environment, because the people are so passionate.
They can be their own program and do it their own way and have success. Not Clemson success, but like
Iowa or Wisconsin success.
For sure. I was going to say Michigan, and I was thinking like, okay, Michigan made the college football playoff. Could Nebraska ever? Yeah, why not? Like, could it happen once in a decade? Sure.
Yeah. Right. You could. If you are a team that is capable of winning the West most years, then there's going to be a year when you can beat Ohio State mm-hmm. in the Big Ten Championship game and go to the playoff. And also, if the playoff expands, you may not have to.
Right.
You know, you
look, Michigan State made it.
Right. And that same year, Iowa also would have made it.
Would have made it with a win. I mean, they were up.
No. But they would have made a 12-team playoff. Iowa would have just made it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, would have made a 12. Would have made the 4-team playoff if without the fourth down at
Absolutely.
The goal line. Yeah.
Well, that drive by Michigan State, that's the most Big Ten drive I've ever seen in my life. So I do think there is hope at Nebraska. And you and I have talked about this a bunch of times. I realize that the average person who is not following Nebraska football that closely assumes Nebraska fans think the 90s are coming back. I've never got that impression
right.
from people in Nebraska.
Not in the last 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steve Peterson thought it in 2004, and that's about the last time.
Right. Yeah. They seem very realistic about what the future prospects are, what the expectations should be. It's just they have not been met. The realistic expectations have not been met. So now they got to figure that out.
We'll be right back after these words.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I did want to ask you, even though he's not on the team anymore, about Adrian Martinez. He's off to Kansas State. How is he going to be remembered at Nebraska?
I think he'll be remembered fondly because what a tough guy he mm-hmm. was. As his career at Nebraska wound down, we heard, things were confirmed
right.
about the injuries that he endured.
The crazy injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, his jaws,
broken jaw.
Shut. Yeah.
The guy was drinking through a straw in order to be able to play and Adrian has talked about this since he's left Nebraska.
Once the jaw healed, yeah.
Yeah. And he talked about it after he transferred and, some things simmered down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he'll be remembered as just, and he was a great leader.
Yeah.
And so good, with his public, mm-hmm. The stuff he did, like the front facing things.
Yeah.
I mean, Adrian's, I don't know what he's going to do, 10 years from now, whether he's going to be in the media, whether he's going to be, in politics, whether he's going to be like, some kind of a CEO.
He's not going to be an insurance salesman with the offensive lineman.
No.
Right? Okay.
And those guys can be very successful, but Adrian's going to be somebody who people know.
Yeah.
And is going to be out there. He's going to be leading some kind of a group. That's the kind of person he is. He didn't win. Nebraska didn't win with him. He set records. I don't necessarily think that's his legacy.
Right.
That his yardage total is
up there.
Yeah,
people
are
going to look back on
no,
that.
No, it's more just, I think it's the person that he was and how much he gave to the program. It does come down to wins. He's not going to be remembered like Tommy Frazier or Eric Crouch, Turner Gill, but he has his spot and it's secure.
But see, that's what I like about Nebraska fans, because they are educated football fans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they know what happened was not Adrian Martinez's fault.
Right.
That he was doing everything he could.
He was a factor.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, look, there were some moments where it was kind of the opposite of clutch.
Yeah.
There were some times. But again, he needed people around
him. You can't put all of that on him. And
his receiving talent, his first year had a good receiver, mm-hmm. Stanley Morgan in the NFL with the Bengals. And then it was like, okay, make this work with Wandale Robinson. Again, recent second round pick who had to go to Kentucky to do that. But also Wandale is going to be your running back.
Yeah.
And sometimes he'll play a receiver, and he's really the only weapon that Nebraska had for a couple of years with Adrian as the quarterback. And he's getting beat up. Knee injuries, shoulder injuries, lack of development on the offensive line, no identity, no help from the special teams. The defense was, slowly but surely
getting better. Not there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Wandale is interesting, because he was Kentucky's most dynamic playmaker by far, but they had three or four NFL offensive linemen mm-hmm. blocking for some pretty good backs. Mm-hmm. Will Levis, pretty good quarterback getting in the ball. And it's amazing how efficient you become once you do that.
Right. I read Wandale's comments about how this never would have happened, this being him drafted in the second round, if he had stayed at Nebraska. And I think there were some Nebraska people, fans, perhaps inside the program, who, you know, took offense to that and thought, you know, but it's not wrong. Right. And it's not wrong. And I don't think he meant it mean-spirited.
No.
It was more like Kentucky had this situation set up for me to be able to succeed. And yeah. it just wasn't that way at Nebraska. And that is just a straight fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what. And it's funny because what is Kentucky if not a Big Ten West team?
Sure. Yeah.
What does Mark Stoops do? He goes into Ohio and says, Ohio State doesn't want you. Come play for me so you can go play against, you know, Georgia and Alabama and all those guys.
Or he recruits a quarterback who says Penn State doesn't right. want you. Come yes. here through yeah, the transfer right. portal.
Penn State has chosen another person. Come. Yeah. Come to me. You're exactly right. I mean, yeah, so Kentucky might be the best Big Ten West team if we really think about it.
Well, if you put last year's Kentucky team in the Big Ten West, I think it would have had a lot of success.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I bet they're just built that way. So it's, but it's also another good model because they don't run the Wisconsin offense. They don't run the Iowa offense. They're trying to run the Shanahan, the, you know, Mike down to Kyle McVay, you know. So that offense.
Can you imagine, like, we're having this conversation about how Nebraska can look at Kentucky as a model for how to fix some things in its football program?
Good Lord. let's go back to somebody in 1995 and explain that.
Yeah.
That logic.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be like saying it the opposite with basketball.
Exactly.
Like, oh, hey, Kentucky, you know, go look at Nebraska basketball.
Well, Kentucky's looking for some pointers after the St. Peter's loss. So.
Mm-hmm, right, right. But Nebraska would love to lose to St. Peter's in the NCAA tournament.
Exactly, exactly. But it is amazing that we're thinking about it that way. But that's sort of where it is right now. But I do think I'm very excited to watch Nebraska this season just because stuff's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to be very eventful one way or the other. Either they've turned it around
mm-hmm.
and we start looking at an upward trajectory
mm-hmm.
and potentially this. Because again, I think the circumstances, and I don't know how long this NIL stuff, it will morph, mm-hmm. the structure will change, all that stuff. But if it is what it is now for a little bit longer, I think that benefits Nebraska. And then, you know, if they're on an upward trajectory, if they feel like the coach isn't, you know, doing what he's supposed to be doing, they might be able to get some guys out of the portal. They might be able to get some recruits
mm-hmm.
that they wouldn't have been in the mix for earlier.
I'm excited about seeing Nebraska in a litmus test game in the opener because mm-hmm. one, it's in Ireland, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
But also it's against that, you know, we mentioned that just the point differential. It's against that team
right.
that you thumped by 50 points mm-hmm. last year. So
which
if you as Nebraska are if you lose to them a year later,
yeah,
what does that say about?
Well, this is Northwestern is one of those every other year teams.
I know, and it's dangerous.
Yeah,
it's dangerous because you're not going to beat them by 49. I mean, I think the spread's like double digits. It's like 10.5, and it's like, wait, this is Nebraska Northwestern. They play overtime games every year. Mm-hmm. I mean, forget what happened last year. That was weird. That was fluky. That's not going to happen. But once every 12 years in this series, so, and then. So that game is going to tell us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If Nebraska goes to Dublin and Northwestern pushes Nebraska around at the line of scrimmage,
oh boy,
it's going to be a long, long year in that area. That's a red flag already.
Well, I think it's going to be a short. It's going to be a barrel through September, and then they start looking toward the future in October if that happens.
And then the other one is Oklahoma comes to Lincoln for the first time mm-hmm. since the Big 12 days. And, you know, we saw a competitive, good, well-played, you know, interesting, fun game in Norman last year. And you know, there's so much change at OU. So it's a different kind of OU team. And this is an opportunity for Scott Frost to get a signature win.
Yeah.
And, I mean, people, I haven't heard, it's May, I haven't heard a lot of talk about it yet, but I think as we get into the summer and some of that, excitement, as you said, ramps up, which it always does. Yeah. It's going to in July. I mean, not like excitement as, oh, they're going to win 10 games, but like, okay, what's the best case scenario here? Mm-hmm. Like, could they beat Oklahoma? I mean, Oklahoma's like maybe a lower half of the top 25. Look at the game that happened last year. They're going to be they're breaking in a new coach, a new quarterback. You know, it's in Lincoln. The Huskers could be undefeated at that point because if you beat Northwestern.
Yeah.
So that is Scott Frost hasn't had a signature win.
Right.
He hasn't, you know, he beat Michigan State in the snow in year one. It was a 500 Michigan State. I mean, he hasn't beaten Iowa, hasn't beaten Wisconsin. So, hey, here's your chance.
That's right. And that'll happen. Or the opposite direction happens, and you're dealing with a coaching search probably in October, November.
Yeah.
And look, Nebraska, with the rules different, with the environment different, maybe a different job, maybe looked at differently as a job. So I'm not gonna fire somebody right now. We're sitting here in May, so we're not firing anybody here. But it would be intriguing to see how that job would be viewed. Now, Scott Frost has a chance to make sure nobody even thinks about that. So we'll see. I never want to see anybody get fired. So hopefully he can get that straightened out and they have a good early season and this gets all figured out. But you're going to have an eventful year to cover one way or the other.
That's, that's really the most important thing.
That's right. The news never stops with Mitch Sherman. Mm-hmm. All right. He's going to get back in the gym. He's got some more thrusters.
Done for the day. For the week. It's Friday.
I'm just imagining you singing Love Shack now. That's real. The real mystery.
Not going to do it here.
Not even a little tin roof rusting?
No, not going to do it. I mean, yeah.
I tried. Yeah.